So, yeah, I've got the privilege of preaching this morning out of Ephesians. If you're new to One Harvard, really all we do is we just go through books of the Bible and look at what they have to say about Jesus. And so we have been in the book of Ephesians, which was written by a guy named Paul to a church that was in a town called Ephesus. And so we're going to be in chapter 4. And before we get there, just kind of a little introduction. You may remember last week Brian Recker was here and spoke, and he just commented on how in Ephesians, the first three chapters, Paul does this really amazing job of describing how great Jesus is and all that Jesus did, the fact that he saved us, he adopted us, he gave us an inheritance. And now there's a bit of a transition happening in the book, and we're going to get into really the rest of Ephesians, which is really now based on what Jesus has done. Now, what are we supposed to go do? How should that change us? What should our behavior look like as Christians? And what's the fruit of all that? Today is going to be the last time we're in Ephesians until the fall. We're going to take a break from Ephesians this summer. That's largely because we want to give our community groups and our community group leaders a break. And we've been going through Ephesians in community groups, so we just want to be able to finish out the book with community groups this fall. So today is the last time we'll be in Ephesians until the fall. So that being said, we're gonna look at a text in Ephesians 4, and it's really a continuation of the passage that Brian read last week, and it's a passage about the body. So we looked at what Christ has done, now we're looking at the body, and then we'll go on to look at, as individuals, what does it look like to live for Jesus. And the theme of this text is maturity, which I think for some people, that you may be excited that we're actually finally going to be talking about this topic. I think that some people, one of the criticisms we've heard of One Harbor is that, man, when are you guys going to stop talking about the gospel and get on with it? Which we really have no intention of ever doing that. But I did have a friend one time who came and told me, hey, I think that One Harbor is a great church. He said, but I think it's probably more helpful for new believers. I've been a Christian a long time, and I really want to mature. And so clearly, his understanding of maturity is something very specific. And I think that's one of the problems that we have when we approach this topic, is that we all probably have a different idea about what a mature Christian is really supposed to look like. How would we define it? If we polled the audience, I bet you we would get a whole bunch of different answers. We said, hey, what's a mature Christian look like? Maybe it's someone that really knows their Bible. Maybe it's someone that has a really robust prayer life. Maybe it's someone that has very powerful kind of spiritual experiences, or someone who has a lot of wisdom and can give good counsel. Maybe it's someone whose gifts really has like very amazing gifting. So we think when we get mature, our gifts finally really come out. And I don't know that any of those things are bad. But are any of those really the biblical definition of maturity? So we're going to look at what Paul has to say about maturity. So go ahead and open your Bibles. If you don't have a Bible, that's fine. The verses are going to be on the screen behind me. We're going to start in verse 11. And Paul said, he, Jesus, gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and teachers to equip the saints for the work of ministry, for building up the body of Christ, until we all attain to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, so that we may no longer be children, tossed to and fro by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by human cunning, by craftiness and deceitful schemes. Rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow, so that it builds itself up in love. Now, the first thing that Paul does is he talks about some very specific gifts. He talks about apostles, prophets, teachers, and evangelists. And we want you to know that we think that those gifts are real, because the Bible says they're real. And we believe that Jesus gave those gifts to the church after he ascended, and we think those gifts are still here today, and that God gave them to the church for the benefit of the church. But we also think that there's been a lot of harm done around these gifts. And I think a lot of us, we come from very different backgrounds and traditions, and so I think there's different understandings of what those gifts look like, fleshed out in the local church. The reality is we don't think that we would be able to go through and look at each one of those things in a single Sunday morning, but we still think they're really important. So what we're going to do is, after we're finished this series on Ephesians, we're going to come back, and we're going to go through these gifts in detail and see what they're really about and why we think Jesus gave them to us and what they're for. But despite that, what we do want to comment on this morning is the fact that Paul says that Jesus gave the church gifts for a reason, and that the reason is to bring the church into a fullness of Jesus, into maturity. That's why he gave us gifts. Now, what is it that we mature into? Well, Paul says that we attain to the unity of faith, knowledge of the Son of God, mature manhood, and the fullness of Christ. You see, even when we talk about maturity, it's still all about Jesus. And that is one of the first problems. If we think that maturity is something that we get Jesus, we get the gospel, we assume it, and then we go on and maturity has something to do with things that aren't involving him, well, we've made a big mistake, because really, if you take Jesus and the gospel out of the conversation, there's not much left to talk about for Christians. So the first thing that we see is that maturity is still all about Jesus, because we're maturing into him. Now, Paul uses a metaphor. He's talking about the church as a body. So we have to remember as we go through this today that this is primarily a passage about the body, the church. So what Paul isn't saying is that we are all supposed to each mature into these like self-sufficient, robust men. Like you're a child and then you need to mature so you're a man and you can really take care of yourself. Actually, what he's saying is we mature as individuals and the body is the church. And the church as its head is Jesus. So that's the language that we're using, and it's going to be helpful to keep that in mind. Now, Paul says that he's talking about unity of faith and knowledge in the Son of God. And just something else before we get into this that we need to understand is that word knowledge, there's different Greek words that mean knowledge. And Paul's not using the Greek word, which means information, just like data. He's using the word which means comprehension and discernment. And if we miss that, there's a great chance that we're going to end up like the Pharisees. Because the problem with the Pharisees is that they had a lot of information, right? The Pharisees were the people who their culture thought was the most mature of all people. I mean, if you could only attain to the righteousness of the Pharisee, they memorized whole swaths of scripture. But Jesus said that everything that they knew, it was only data, and they didn't really know what it was about. He said, "You've missed me. The scripture is about me." And that's how you have it possible to know all about God, but not really know him. And so it's that kind of knowledge that we're talking about. So we're going to look at what does it really mean to mature into the knowledge of Jesus. Now, before we look at what does that maturity really look like, first we need to ask, what is the problem if Christians don't mature? Well, there's some real consequences. So Paul says that we remain as children. And I just first want to say that it doesn't matter if you have a PhD or if you're a genius. When you give your life to Jesus, you have not simply improved upon your old life, you have an entirely new life, which means you're starting out as a Christian child. And so being a child is okay. Every single person, when they come to faith in Jesus, starts there. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's just something wrong with staying there. And when we stay there, that's when we really begin to see that there's some problems. You see, Paul says that children, the problem with children is that they're tossed to and fro by waves because they're fickle and they're unstable. Now, some of you who are parents, you know this. Children are so easily deceived. You can tell a child anything and they will believe it. But then you need to actually instruct them on something they're supposed to do and they don't believe you because they know a better way. So that's how children are. They don't believe the things they should believe. They believe the things they shouldn't. They're back and forth. You know, one day they wake up and it's the best day of their life, and then 5 minutes later it's the worst day of their life. Actually, I've got a picture here of my little boy, Dawson. Okay, this is my son. Yeah, you can say that. He's a cute kid. So this is him. This is last summer. I was taking some photos of him, and then go ahead and show that next photo. That was like his mood changed faster than my shutter speed. Let's go back again. Go back. All right, best day in the world. 1 second later, worst day in the world, okay? So that's a little illustration of how children can be. And I think as Christians, we can be that way, right? We can be that way when it comes to Jesus. You know, Paul's saying that immature Christians, you know, some new teaching comes along and it changes everything. Oh, this new book came out, today, you know, I'm on fire for Jesus. And then the next day, it's like, I don't even know if he loves me. And so these people, it's not that they're not Christians. It's not that they didn't know him. They're just immature. And I think it's worth pointing out that if you have never thought of yourself as an immature Christian, then that means that you probably are one. And I think this should make sense to us because, children. Children never admit that they're immature, do they? I mean, parents, has your 5-year-old ever come up to you after throwing a tantrum? Said, you know, I've been thinking. And I have just realized that the problem here is me. And I just need to grow. No, they'd never say that. They never do. Children don't say that. Adolescents rarely say that. And I knew in my life, the first time that I began to realize I was immature is actually when I was in college. So some things happened in my life. And I just remember thinking, man, I've really got to grow up a little bit. I'm acting like a child. I need to mature. The ironic thing is, that is when the maturing really started happening. You see that? Because you can't really mature until you realize that you're immature. And it's because we don't understand that I think that's the reason that we have a lot of very immature Christians who actually think of themselves as very mature. I think we've all been there. I think every one of us at some level can identify with this, including me. I'm going to give you two examples. Mature Christians will subject themselves to authority and discipline. And mature Christians see the value of having someone else who can look into their blind spots because we know we're not perfect. Immature Christians really don't value that at all. Right? So same with adults and kids. Adults submit themselves to authority, structure, routine. Kids hate all that. See, mature Christians know that this is God's plan, that God's power is perfected in weakness. And so that because they're weak people, that sometimes God has to take us through hard times. And we don't necessarily like it. We don't enjoy it, but we know that it's for our good. Whereas immature Christians, really, they can't stand any kind of hardship at all. And so they're always looking for deliverance out of every type of pain rather than trying to see how is God using this for my benefit. And I think that if this is you, because you don't value authority and because you don't value discipline, what will happen is when you go to church, instead of going with the intention of I want to be convicted and I want to grow and I want to be encouraged and changed, you kind of come with your checklist, right? And you evaluate and you examine the church to see if it really fits with your agenda, right? And I just want you to know that I think at some level we all struggle with this, and I still struggle with this. So I'm not just pointing the finger at you. I'm pointing the finger at me. Just a month ago, Kimberly and I, our family's on vacation. We're up at a church in Virginia with some family. I spent the first half of the service standing in the back, just criticizing in my mind everything I thought they were doing wrong. I would do that differently. I would do that differently. Why did they do that? And about halfway through the sermon, the Spirit of God fell on me and convicted me. Because here's what was really happening. A man of God was in the pulpit opening the Word. He loved Jesus, and he was telling me how the Word can help me. And I was too immature to hear it because I was too focused on making myself feel good about myself. You see how that works? It feels, in that moment, doesn't it feel mature? Doesn't it feel really mature? Like, oh yeah, I'm kind of sitting back. I'm above all this. I'm just kind of criticizing. Really, it's immaturity. Because in 2 Timothy, we read that all Scripture is breathed out by God and profitable for teaching, for reproof, for correction, and training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be, not just the sinner, not just the lost person, but so that the man of God may be complete and equipped for every good work. See, every time we come to church, there's an opportunity to be challenged and to learn and to grow, and mature people see that, but sometimes when we're immature, like I was a month or so ago, we don't do that, do we? We're immature, and it feels so mature, but it's not. Another example is that mature Christians know Jesus so well that they're just, frankly, not worried about much. But immature Christians will often feel that they're being very mature and even noble about how much they're really worried about. I mean, doesn't this make sense? So adults, right? Adults, we grow into confidence. Adults typically aren't freaking out about everything, but kids are scared of everything. And that's exactly what happens with Christians. And I think that there's, in every age, this has happened, probably. I'm speculating here. But I'm speculating in every age, there have been Christians who have said, man, things are worse now than they've ever been. We have probably all said something like that, right? Or think along those terms. Isn't that what's nice about this book of Ephesians? We're seeing that actually, wow, at least it's not that bad. I mean, we don't have a temple of prostitutes where our young men are encouraged after work to go have sex with prostitutes as their spiritual act of worship. It could be worse. You see, the mature Christian knows it doesn't even matter if it was worse now than it ever was. Jesus is still the king. And there's nothing that happens on this planet that he hasn't allowed to happen for his own purposes and with his own plan to redeem. That's the way the mature Christian approaches everything. But when we're immature and we live in fear and insecurity and anxiety, it's not the kind of knowledge of Jesus that we're called to. It means we have information about him, but we don't really know him. We're not convinced of his power in the world. So to mature out of those things, it's required that there's faith and there's a knowledge of the Son of God. We have to attain to the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, like Paul talks about. But here's the thing. Is that enough? So if we're going to mature, is it enough to believe and to know Jesus? I mean, haven't we got to like do some stuff? Haven't we got to obey? Hasn't our behavior actually got to change? Isn't that what real maturity is all about? Well, I would say yes, we do have to obey, and our behavior should change. But even then, is that the ultimate expression of Christian maturity? What I want to do is I want to prove to you that maturity is not less than faith, knowledge, and obedience, but it is more. It is more than that. And so to prove it to you, we're going to look to Luke 17, to a fascinating little story. So starting in Luke 17, verse 5, Jesus is with the disciples, and the apostle said to the Lord, increase our faith. So first thing that's happening is we're dealing with the subject of maturity. The disciples are saying, we want to grow. We want to have bigger faith, right? I mean, maturing and growing and increasing faith, those are fairly synonymous. The first thing Jesus says is that if you had faith like a grain of a mustard seed, you could say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. So the disciples want their faith increased. First thing Jesus said is, okay, really, it's not about you, it's about me. If you had even this much faith in me, you could do anything. So he's reminding them, this really isn't about you, it is about me. It is not the quality of our faith that matters, it's the object of our faith that matters. But I think if we keep reading, the following passages actually continue to inform this question. So Jesus says, will any one of you who has a servant plowing or keeping sheep say to him when he has come in from the field, come at once, recline at table? Will he not rather say to him, prepare supper for me and dress properly and serve me while I eat and drink, and afterward you will eat and drink? Does he thank the servant because he did what he was commanded? So you also, when you have done all that you were commanded, say, we are unworthy servants. We have only done what was our duty. Now, I can't help when I read that and just feel completely uninspired. Because to be honest, if I had someone who worked for me, who did a great job, who worked really hard, I wouldn't go and say, hey, don't expect any thanks for this. It was just your job. And yet that's what Jesus is saying. It's a little hard, right? I mean, it doesn't like, so there are some things Jesus say that are like really wonderful and we put them on plaques on our wall. This isn't on anyone's wall, you know, like this one. Some things he says are really hard, aren't they? Jesus is saying, I'm not here to celebrate obedience. Okay? I'm not here to celebrate. It is required. And I think that we can also, it's also safe to say that we don't mature into obedience. Obedience is required at the start. I mean, it is really challenging to our faith when we read the gospel account and read all the people that came to Jesus and he demanded obedience from the beginning. It wasn't like once you're a mature Christian, you obey. No, you must obey right away with Jesus. There is no on the fence with him. So he's saying, I don't celebrate obedience, but it's not as uninspiring as it sounds. We've got to keep reading. On the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers who stood at a distance and lifted up their voices saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priests. And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, were not 10 cleansed? Where are the 9? Was no one found to return and give praise to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. Now here's what's happening. There's 10 lepers and they come to Jesus and they want to be healed. Jesus tells them to go to the temple. That may not seem like a big deal, but it was a really big deal. And here's why. He had not already healed them. And a leper is not allowed to go to the temple. So Jesus is telling them to do something and it's really a test of their faith. And remarkably, they don't question him. All 10 of them say, okay. And they go on the way. And as they obey and as they're walking, their bodies are healed miraculously. Amazing. And then the one returns to Jesus, and Jesus says something that's interesting. He says, well, where are the 9? So Jesus is expecting that all 10 were going to come back. Now, are you starting to see what's happening here? You see, the nine could have said, Jesus, we did precisely what you told us to do. You did not tell us to come back. You didn't tell us to come back. You said, go to the temple. We did exactly what you told us to do. But we just read about how Jesus does not celebrate obedience. He's looking for more than that, isn't he? And so there's one man who's cleansed who comes back and he falls on his face and he worships Jesus. The disciples say, Jesus, increase our faith. And I think what Jesus is saying is the mark of maturity, the mark of increased faith is you don't just do what I say. you come back and you fall down and you worship me and you adore me because you think I'm better than anything else. Jesus told that one leper, he says, go, your faith has made you well. Well, all 10 were cleansed, weren't they? But that word well can be translated also as saved. Your faith has saved you. You see, 10 were cleansed, one found Jesus. See, growth and maturity will necessarily involve obedience and reading the word and praying. It's going to involve those things. But it's not less than that. It is more than that. It's a transformed heart. Because you can do everything right. You can do everything right. But if at the end of the day, your heart does not really adore Jesus, then you have missed it. And I think this should make sense to us on several levels. I'm just going to use an example from marriage. All right, when there's marital conflict and a husband and a wife sit down to hash it out, what do men often do? At least I do. And we say, okay, there's a problem. What five things? We're problem solvers. What five things must I do to fix this? What five things do you want me to change? Now, does that ever work? No. And if you think your wife is okay... If you think your wife is okay with that, she's tricking you. Okay? She's not okay with it. Because here's the thing. Kimberly is my wife. She doesn't want me to come and approach our marriage as a checklist. She wants to know, above all other things, I really adore and cherish her. Now, I have to do the things on the list. I still have to do them. But that can't be what it's about. She's not ever going to talk about, I'm such an amazing husband because I took out the trash, which I don't do a good job of that, so she's not going to say that anyway. But she's not going to talk about what an amazing husband I am because of the things that I do. If she's going to talk about me as an amazing husband, it will be because she knows that I love her. And that is what Jesus is saying. I'm not looking for disciples who just do the checklist. Maturing isn't about just becoming super proud of yourself and all the good things that you do. At the end of the day, maturing is about loving and worshiping him. And that's also what I think Jesus is getting at in Matthew 7. When he says this, he says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name? And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness. I think that is the most scary passage in all of Scripture. Because what it says is, you can be as gifted, you can be more gifted than anyone else. You can be so confident in your gifting, you can be doing these great things. But man, if your heart is cold towards Jesus, it doesn't mean anything. And I don't think Jesus puts the emphasis on our gifting nearly as much as we do. Because he didn't mature us so that our gifts could be profiled. He gave us gifts so that we could mature. And I'm not, by the way, I don't think reading anything into the text that's not there. Because Paul has been saying this from the very beginning. We do not have time to go back and read all the verses. But if you go back to Ephesians 1 and you read about all the things that Jesus has done for us, it is startling how many things Paul says Jesus did for one reason, so that we would live to the praise of his glory or to the praise of his grace. Why did he give us an inheritance? It was for the praise of his glory. Why did he adopt us? It was for the praise of his glory. Everything is about worshiping him. And so it's the same thing with maturity. We are maturing into people that worship him. Actually, in chapter 2, God says that he saved us so that he could show us the immeasurable riches of his grace and kindness in Jesus. Do you realize how remarkable that is? God saved us so we could enjoy him. Now, you compare that with every other religion where you must do something so that God will do something for you. This says that God saved you just so that you could enjoy him. Now, you have to obey him. Don't hear what I'm not saying. But I'm saying the real heart of this is worship. Now, we said at the beginning that this passage is actually about the body. So it's easy to read this and think it's just about, we only want to apply it to ourselves as individuals. And as Americans, guys, I think we do that all the time, don't we? We take the Bible and we apply it just to us because we see things through a very individualistic lens. But we have to remember that this passage, Paul's really talking about the whole body. In verses 15 and 16, he said, rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ, from whom the whole body, joined and held together by every joint with which it is equipped, when each part is working properly, makes the body grow so that it builds itself up in love. See, Paul's saying that when we mature into Jesus and we're captivated with him and we're not like children, you know, we're not being confused, tossed about every which way, we're going to function in the body much better. But if I'm making the case that maturity is all about, if maturity is all about loving and worshiping Jesus, how does me loving Jesus help me serve the body better? How does that happen? I have another picture I want to show you. The subtitle of this sermon is "I Have Adorable Children." So, yeah. So this is a picture of my other little child, Lala Faye. This picture was taken last summer. She just turned two. I've used this picture a few different times because I think it makes some great illustrations. I think it's a great picture of my little girl, which is one of the reasons I love it. But I see truths of the gospel when I look at this picture, and here's why. Lila Faye is terrified of the ocean. She does not like being out in the waves. She's really just, to be quite honest, she's scared of a lot of things, but she's really scared of being out in the waves. But when this picture was taken, she just turned two, and in those 2 years, Lila Faye had grown and learned quite a bit about Kimberly and I, and she learned that we really love her, and she learned that she can trust us. And as she has matured into that kind of understanding of her relationship with us, it's had a really big effect on her. And that effect has been so significant that she can go out in the waves and not be terrified. Now, is she smiling there because she's two and she's really something? No, she and I both know if I let her go, she's going to get swept away. She can go out into the waves, which scare her, and smile like that solely because she knows me, she knows I'm not going to let her go, and she's enjoying being with me. So she's not, do you see, she's not just in the waves. She's thriving in the waves. Now, if this was a picture of me holding Lila Faye and she just looked scared, I probably wouldn't be showing it to you because it wouldn't be captivating at all. It'd just be weird. It's a moving picture. It's a moving picture because she's thriving. She's alive. She's enjoying life. And here's the point I'm trying to make. If you do not have a heart that truly adores Jesus, I'm not saying you're not a Christian. I'm saying you may even be a Christian, but there are parts of your heart that do not truly see him as more beautiful than anything else. Then you may function in life, but you will not be able to thrive. Because it will be a matter of time until Jesus calls you out into the waves of life, the places that you don't want to be, the places that are so uncomfortable and that are really scary. And you're going to go out there and at best you will function. You may be able to do your job, but you won't be able to thrive, and you will hurt the body. That's why when we talk about those examples of immature Christians, man, when we do those things, we're really hurtful, aren't we? Christians, you know, when we have a fear of the world that's greater than our faith in Jesus, Christians can be some of the worst fear mongers because we're always talking about how terrible the world is, and we're always looking scared instead of talking about how great our King is and looking confident. See, we hurt the body when we're not thriving. But if you know who it is, if you know who it is that holds you in the palms of his hands, and if you know how much he loves you and cares for you, and you are confident in him and you trust him, then you will be able to not only function, but thrive in any environment and circumstance. And that is how the body matures, is when we just don't do our jobs, but as Paul says, we do them properly, rejoicing with joy and peace and love and affection, glorifying Jesus, who is the head. What happens is we stir each other's faith. There was you guys may remember last week we prayed for a couple, Duke and Ronnie Darty. Duke was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he's got a long road ahead of him. And Brian Recker and I this week, we went down to meet with Duke and pray with him and Ronnie at their house. Neither one of us knew them very well, but we had a wonderful time sitting with them. Still don't know them very well. But when we both left, we were just dumbfounded because Duke is facing, he's got a really rough road ahead of him. Really uncertain. And yet his attitude and Ronnie's attitude were, we trust Jesus, he's the King and he can do whatever he wants. And when Brian and I got in the car, our faith was so stirred. And I felt so convicted of the things that I put faith in and the things that I worry about. And I was just reminded, if that man can trust Jesus, I can trust Jesus. You see, when we're thriving, we build the body up. But when we're not thriving, we can hurt the body. There's a pastor who is famous for saying that God is most glorified in us when we're most satisfied in him. See, there are a lot of ways that we give God glory, a lot of ways we bring him glory, but one of the best ways is simply when we enjoy him. And there are so many ways that helps the body. I'll just give you just one example. We read a few weeks ago about how the church is supposed to put on display the manifold wisdom of God, We are supposed to take the good news of the gospel to a lost and dying world. Now, how much better of a job are we going to do if we are a church that is captivated with Jesus above everything else? Because if we're not, then at the most, what people will hear is the duty and the rules and all the stuff that doesn't come with life. But if we're captivated with Jesus, they may not understand why we believe what we believe. But when they see us getting sick or going through hardship, and yet we're still rejoicing and celebrating everything that Jesus gave us, that they'll understand something. There's something there that will connect with them. And they say, I want to know more. So Winston Churchill had a really, I love this quote. I heard this years ago. He was talking about how to speak publicly to people, but it applies to this kind of thing. He said, before you can inspire with emotion, you must be swamped with it yourself. Before you can move their tears, your own must flow. To convince them, you must yourself believe. If people don't realize and they don't see that you believe, they never will believe what you're telling them. And being people who are worshipers is the best way to convince people. I think we as Christians are very afraid about having the wrong answers when it comes time to talk to people, right? We all want to have the right answers. Evangelism is very scary. The best way to evangelize is talk about Jesus like he is the best treasure you've ever found. I promise you, it'll speak more than all your right answers. That is when the church really comes alive. Another pastor said that maturity is a vertical thing that has a wide variety of horizontal expressions. And we're going to get to those things. We are coming to them. Because when we mature, it does affect our behavior, and there is a certain way that Jesus said that we are to live. But it doesn't start there. Maturing and maturity start in the heart. I just want to kind of close with this. You know, in that story of the lepers, all 10 of them obeyed. And every command Jesus gives us is for our benefit. And every time that we obey him, we really do benefit. So as those lepers obeyed, they were healed. And as you and I obey Jesus, he's healing us, isn't he? Every single time we listen to him and do what he says, he's shaping our life. He's working stuff out in our heart. He's increasing our faith. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't bring us right back to where we started, man, we have missed it. And that is at the feet of Jesus in worship of him. As the band comes up, I just want to close and kind of go into a response by talking to some of us this morning who may feel a little bit convicted about some immaturity in our lives. I don't know, maybe you're realizing that there is some immaturity that you didn't see before. Maybe you're realizing that the reason that your behavior hasn't changed as much as you thought it could or should is because really there's a part of your heart that just isn't convinced that Jesus is as good as he says he is. There's a part of your heart that's not convinced that if you lost everything but still had Jesus, that you'd be rich. And maybe you're realizing that you are kind of like a child tossed to and fro by the circumstances of life. And if that's you, and especially if you are someone who struggles even having a heart that desires to worship Jesus, I think that's something a lot of Christians struggle with. We talk about worship, we talk about adoring him, but what happens when we just don't feel like it? I've been there many times. And if that is you, I want to give you a very practical suggestion that someone gave me a long time ago and it's been very helpful. And that is this: to do the duty of praising Jesus even when you don't feel like it. Even when it doesn't feel sincere, even when it feels almost even dishonest to be saying things that you don't feel. Because what will happen is the same thing that would happen if you spoke well of someone else. Because this is what the psychologists say happens. When I speak positively of someone else, if I speak well of Ryan Marshall, it creates goodwill and positive feelings toward Ryan Marshall. Likewise, if I speak poorly of him, if I'm critical of him, I have a critical spirit, and I slander him and talk bad about him, it creates negative feelings. And so it's cyclic. The worse my feelings are, the worse I speak. But the better we speak, the better we feel, and then the better we speak. And that is how we mature into Jesus. We tell him the things that we know are true, even when we don't feel like it. So we can afford to sit not feeling anything and saying, Jesus, you're amazing, you're wonderful, and you're beautiful. We may not feel it, but I promise you, if you are diligent to keep doing that, it will be a matter of time until your heart, you begin to feel like, oh my gosh, he really is amazing and beautiful and wonderful. And when that happens, then the behavior stuff becomes so easy. Because now we're not obeying simply because we have to. We're obeying because we see it as worship. And it's starting to become natural. If you're here today and you don't know Jesus, maybe you know all about him, I don't know, but you don't know him. just want to remind yourself what you're saying no to. Because one of the greatest works of Satan has been to convince people that following Jesus is all about adhering to a list of rules and living a very boring life. And I promise you this, it doesn't matter what lifestyle you subscribe to, it comes with a list of rules. There's rules everywhere you go, but following Jesus, contrary to what some have been told, is the most fulfilling, the most exhilarating, and the most enjoyable lifestyle you can possibly imagine. Jesus said that at his right hand, there are pleasures that you can never exhaust. And he is the only God who says that he saved you simply so that you could enjoy him. It's the greatest love story that has ever been told. And so if you want to know more about that, we would love to talk with you and pray with you. I'll be up here after the service with Jesse and Alan, some of the other pastors. He also goes by Bear, but it's really Sugar Bear, so it's okay. He won't hurt you. It's the gift that keeps on giving, buddy. We're going to take communion here in a minute. And man, communion is just this reminder that the only reason we get to talk about any of this is because of what Jesus did. We don't mature because we're such great people. We mature because Jesus puts the Spirit inside us, which changes us. He adopted us into his family. He does everything. He just asked us to come and be a part of it. Would you stand with me?